Every fall, we brace ourselves for another flu season. And which lasts in any location usually about 6 weeks. 3 weeks from the start till the peak in the middle, and then 3 weeks to significantly diminish. And it's during this period of time when we are most susceptible to contracting the disease. Flu season usually occurs in the colder months of the year, usually when cold weather first settles in. People during this time are usually indoors rather than out. They're in closer contact with one another, with the result that promotes the transmission of the flu from one person to another. Children are back in school. And so the germ can quickly pass in the classroom to the teacher, to their husband. And with the cold weather, homes and offices are usually closed up tightly, so you're recirculating the same air and thus circulating the germs. Cold temperature also leads to drier air, which may dehydrate the mucus, preventing the body from effectively expelling the virus particles. Researchers have also discovered that the germs spread better when the air is cold and dry. And the virus may live longer on exposed surfaces such as doorknobs or countertops in colder temperatures. Researchers have discovered that the influenza virus have a butter-like coating encasing the virus. In the summertime, the coating melts before the virus can reach your lungs. But in the winter time, when it's cold, the outer butter-like coating becomes a hard shell, protecting it. It does not melt until it's lodged deep in the warmth of your lungs. Since we know that there is a certain season of the year when we are most susceptible to contracting the disease, we can therefore take precautions as we see the season approaching. We might avoid certain circumstances or situations where we would be exposed. We wash our hands. We get proper rest and so on, nutrition, and our body's immune systems can be built up to resist the flu bug. Many of you get a flu shot every year. About in the fall, usually it's a kind of a Russian roulette type thing because researchers have to kind of predict what flu strain is going to be, and if they predict right, you're good. If not, so sorry. You'll probably get the flu. Now, perhaps due to this milder winter that we had, this year's flu season lasted longer. In fact, it is just now starting to wind down. According to the U.S. health officials, this year was relatively a mild one. 2015, last year, an estimated 40 million Americans came down with the flu. Nearly 1 million were hospitalized, and 148 children died, according to the Center for Disease Control. Now, comparable numbers are not available yet as for this year, but so far, only 40 children have died from the flu. So from the limited data that we have available, it seems that this year's season was just like the winter weather, a milder one. Now, may I say to you this morning that just as there is a season when we're more susceptible to the flu, so there are seasons of life when we are more susceptible to temptation. Circumstances, situations, conditions, which make us more vulnerable to the attacks of our adversary. While we may be tempted every day, there are certain periods of time when temptation is a little bit stronger. The lure towards sin away from God is hard to resist. We feel like we are under attack, and indeed we are. We are under attack by our adversary, Satan, who's like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. Satan, the enemy of God and God's children, attacks us. He uses his allies of the world that surrounds us and the lust that's within us to move us to disobey God and to follow our own understanding. But a great help in countering the attack of our enemy is to know when he will attack, or those seasons when we are most susceptible to temptation. And so far in our study, we've noted five seasons. Five different times when we are vulnerable to being tempted. I said, first of all, we need to beware of the times when you and I are in the midst or coming off of a spiritual high. Those periods of time when we're really walking with the Lord, things are going great, and it seems like some things are happening in our lives. Usually following times of tremendous blessings comes times of tremendous testing. It's when we step out and take a stand for Christ that temptations come. We need to beware of when we are being led by the Spirit. We erroneously think that because we're being led by the Spirit, that therefore we cannot be led into temptation, but yet Jesus Christ here is being led by the Spirit into the wilderness, into the place of temptation, and so we can be led by the Spirit into temptation. Don't mistakenly think that because you've surrendered to the will of God and the Spirit of God is leading you in life, you'll not be tempted, because God uses temptation to test. He tests the genuineness of our faith and the depth of our character and commitment to Him, our obedience. Beware of those times of isolation when you're alone in your wilderness. You can be alone even in a crowd of people. When you're away from those who know and love you and you're in a desolate place, that's just the season for temptation. Beware of the subtle temptation of a long siege. When the suffering or hardships do not go away, but they linger on and on. Watch out for the doubt, for the unbelief, for anger with God, for developing a bitter spirit and a bitter attitude during those times of a long siege. You might be successful at first at praising God for and trusting Him while being put to the test, but it's when the test doesn't end. It continues on and on and on. That becomes a time for temptation. And then last week was beware when we're in the presence of bad dudes. And there are a lot of bad dudes out there. For one, the devil himself is a bad dude. And he personally tempted Jesus to disobey his Father and join him in rebellion against God, he may not personally tempt you. He is a finite being. He can only be at one place at one time. And so he's got other bigger fish in the sea to catch and to tempt. But he has a lot of help. He has a demonic population that is at war with us, plus the unregenerate world and culture that surrounds us all seeks to pressure us, to force us into its mold. And so we need to choose our friends wisely. Proverbs says those who walk with the wise will grow wise, but a companion of fools will come to ruin. So pick your friends wisely. Can't pick your family, but you can pick your friends. Now, there are other seasons that I want to share, three more this morning, where we're vulnerable. As I said at the beginning, my list is not exhaustive. There may be other times, but there are two not mentioned in Luke 4 that I believe are important and should be stated before we consider the last condition that ushered in the first temptation of Christ. Another season in which we are susceptible to temptation is when we are full of self-confidence. Full of self-confidence. Who can forget Peter? On the night of Jesus' arrest, after they had enjoyed the Passover meal together, after Satan had entered into the heart of Judas Iscariot and had left to summon the arresting band of Jewish soldiers, on their way to the Garden of Gethsemane, Jesus turns to his disciples and said to them, "All of you will be made to stumble because of me this night, for it is written, I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. But after I've been raised, I will go before you to Galilee. All of you are going to stumble. All of you are going to fall away. All of you are going to deny me. Every one of you. Not one of you are going to follow me to the death. But not Peter. Peter replied, even if all are made to stumble because of you, I will never be made to stumble. Not me. Oh yeah, everybody else, but not me. I know myself. I know that I'm going to stand for you. I'm going to live for you. I will even die for you, Jesus. That will never happen to me. Others might, but not me. In fact, even though Jesus says to him, "Surely I say to you that today, even this night, before the rooster crows twice, you will deny me three times," Peter spoke more vehemently, "If I have to die with you, I will not deny you." Talk about self-confidence, even in the face of predicted failure. Now we all know what happened. Peter folds. He's challenged by a little servant girl. And he can't even stand up to a lowly servant girl. Three times he denies that he knows Jesus, has been one of his followers, and when the rooster crows the second time, Jesus looks at Peter. Peter remembers the words of the Lord, and he goes out and weeps bitterly. Now Paul, 1 Corinthians chapter 10, makes a point for you and I. In that chapter, he points his readers to the Old Testament for examples of how not to follow God. He points out all the spiritual advantages that the children of Israel had as they wandered in the wilderness, the cloud to lead them, the food and water God provided to meet their needs, the spiritual rock that accompanied them. And yet in spite of all these spiritual advantages, the people became idolaters. They sat down to eat, drink, and engage in pagan revelry. They committed mass sexual immorality, with 23,000 dying in one day. They put the Lord to the test by their continual grumbling and complaining. Whole generation was wiped out because of their sin and rebellion. And Paul, beginning at verse 11, draws the application. He says, "Now all these things happened to them as an example, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the end of the age have come. Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he falls." If you think you're standing, take heed. You're about to go down. If you're thinking, "I would never do that. Not that, that could never happen to me. I would never cheat on my wife. I would never commit adultery. I would never steal from anyone. I would never compromise my faith. I would never fall for false teachers. I would never bow down and worship something other than God. I would never, never fall away from my devotion to Christ. Others may, but not me." Think you're standing. Take heed. Don't fall. May I say to you, this is a particular temptation for those of us who counsel other people, who have a desire to help a sinning brother or sister in Christ. Paul instructs us in Galatians chapter 6, verse 1, "Brethren, if a man is overtaken in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, considering yourselves, lest you also be tempted." You're helping a brother or sister in Christ. They're coming over to your house. They're pouring out their hearts to you. You're listening to their faults, their sins, what they've done. And we need to be careful in doing so and take heed to ourselves, lest we think to ourselves, "That could never happen to me. I would never do anything like that." Truth is, Every one of us is susceptible to temptation and to fall into sin. What we need to keep in reminding ourselves is this. There go I, but by the grace of God. There go I, but by the grace of God. I am capable of committing any and every sin. Knowing the deceitfulness of my own heart and my own weaknesses, I need to guard my own life that I do not follow in their steps. Beware of self-confidence. When you are so confident that, man, nothing's going to happen to me, I would never do that. That's the time of the tempter tempts. Remember, pride goes before destruction. A haughty spirit before a fall. Proverbs 16:18. Then Proverbs 18:12, before destruction, the heart of man is haughty, and before honor is humility. Beware of those times of self-confidence. 'Tis the season for temptation. Now there's another season when we're susceptible to temptation, and that is when we're experiencing prosperity or success in life. Moses commanded the second generation, he says, therefore you shall keep the commandment of the Lord your God, to walk in his ways, to fear him, for the Lord your God is bringing you into a good land, a land of brooks of water, of fountains and springs that flow out of the valleys and hills, a land of wheat and barley, of vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of olive oil and honey, a land in which you will eat bread without scarcity, in which you will lack nothing, a land whose stones are iron and out of whose hills you can dig copper. God is going to richly bless you as he's bringing you into this land of promise. It's going to be great abundance, great prosperity, riches. You're going to lack nothing. And their initial response was that he says, when you have eaten and are full, then you shall bless the Lord your God for the good land which he's given to you. That's going to be their initial response. But over time, this newfound prosperity is going to become a test. For Moses goes on to say, beware that you do not forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments, his judgments, his statutes, which I command you today. Lest when you have eaten and are full and have built beautiful houses and dwell in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply and your silver and gold are multiplied and all that you have is multiplied, when your heart is lifted up and you forget the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, from the land of bondage, who led you through the great and terrible wilderness in which were fiery serpents and scorpions, a thirsty land where there was no water, who brought water to you out of the flinty rock, who fed you in the wilderness with manna, which your fathers did not know, that he might humble you, that he might test you, to do you good in the end, that you say in your heart, my power and the might of my hands have gained me this wealth. And you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant, which he swore to your fathers, as in this day. See, the tendency for you and I is when things are going well and we're successful and money's rolling in and we got money in the bank and money invested and things, we're really experiencing the blessings of God, as we would say, in our lives, we start to think to ourselves, I did this myself. My own power, my own strength of the hands have produced this wealth for me. And we begin to think of ourselves as self-made men and self-made women rather than God-blessed men and women. And we're tempted to forget God. I like Agar. Do you remember Agar? He's found in Proverbs chapter 30. He describes himself as a stupid man. First part of that chapter. He says he doesn't know a lot about theology, but he does know some things about life and about living. He understood temptation. He writes in Proverbs 30 verse 7, two things I request of you. Deprive me not before I die, Remove falsehood and lies far from me. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food allotted to me, lest I be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? Or lest I be poor and steal, profane the name of my God. He says, don't make me rich, or else I might disown you. I might forget you. But Lord, don't make me poor either, or I might steal and dishonor your name. Just give me my daily bread. That's all I need. I want to be content with the things that I have in life. Contentment. You know, that's not a word we talk about, or not a word, a concept that people think about today, but being content with what we have. You know, Paul says in 1 Timothy chapter 6, now godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, and it's certain that we can carry nothing out. And having food and clothing with these, we shall be content. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and harmful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. May I say to you this morning, it's not a sin to have money. The temptation comes when we're in the love of money. When we're in love with our money, and the pursuit of wealth is what drives us, and it leads us into temptation and the traps that will ruin us. How many people have compromised their convictions in order to make a buck or to make a sale? How many people have done things that they would never do but for the money? How many politicians have become corrupt due to money? Paybacks. Money under the table that buys votes, a bribe. We're not content with what we have. We want more, even if it means I have to compromise my Christian beliefs in order to obtain it. Because we're not content with what we have, we're not thankful to God either for the same blessings. Beware those times when you're being successful, when the money's rolling in, and it comes time when we just start to think about ourselves and think less about God. 'Tis the season for temptation. Now, may I say to you this morning, there's one more season. It comes from our text this morning. Something else that Jesus experienced and which we experience at which times we're susceptible to being tempted. Look what it says. Verse 2. Actually, I'll begin verse 1. And Jesus, being filled with the Holy Spirit, returned from the Jordan, was led by the Spirit into the wilderness, being tempted for 40 days by the devil. And in those days he ate nothing, and afterwards, when they had ended, he was hungry. Beware of the times when we have unmet physical needs. Unmet physical needs. See, God has designed our physical bodies to function best when certain physical needs are met. All of us here need to eat. God has designed us in such a way that we need to eat food, fruit, vegetables, meat, chocolate, a balanced meal with protein, ice cream, that's in there too, a balanced meal with protein and carbohydrates. We have to have a certain caloric intake to sustain life. We need to eat good, healthy foods to maintain our physical health. Now, there are times when we can fast and should fast to give up eating certain foods or all foods for a particular period of time. It cleanses our bodies of impurities. It gives our digestive tract time to rest. It sheds some unwanted pounds. And a few days of fasting every now and then, or every year or so, is good for the human body. Now, a 40-day fast is a little bit harder on the body. It's not impossible. Moses, if you remember back in the Old Testament, fasted for 40 days and 40 nights when he received the law. Elijah fasted 40 days on his journey to Mount Horeb. And Jesus here fasts for 40 days. And so it's not impossible to do. But it does tax the body. It's about as long as a person can go without the body starting to cannibalize itself and to eat itself. Many of us perhaps could survive a little bit longer. But eventually, if we did not eat, we would die. For God's designed our bodies in such a way that we can, that we need to eat in order to live. All of us here need water to drink. You need water to drink. 66% of the human body is composed of water. And if you, and you and I need to drink approximately 8 glasses of water a day in order to be fully hydrated. It's been shown that if you are 2 quarts low, that you haven't drunk your 8 glasses, you lose about 25% of your efficiency. Your blood becomes thicker, loses volume, this causes your heart to work harder, and the circulation of your blood to be less efficient. Depending upon the number of conditions, the temperature outside, the wind, that your level of health, you could last anywhere from 2 to 10 days without water. So we need water to survive and thrive. All of us need that. That's a human need. Sleep is another one. God has designed our bodies in such a way that we need to sleep. Experts tell us that infants require about 16 hours a day. Teenagers about 9 hours a day. Most adults need 7 to 8 hours a night for the best amount of sleep. Although some people say they need as few as 5 hours and many as 10 or 11. If you feel drowsy during the day, even during boring activities, you haven't had enough sleep. You need more sleep. Now, according to experts, the amount of sleep a person needs increases if he or she has been deprived of sleep in a previous day. And so if you stay up to watch a late night movie or a late sporting event and then have to get up the next morning early for work, it means that you've created a sleep debt that will eventually need to be repaid. Too little sleep may cause slow response time, inattention, reduced short-term memory, impaired judgment, fragmented thought processes where we begin to say something, and then we forget what we were going to say. Fine motor impairment, slurred speech, clumsiness, unable to remember names of people or objects, unable to bring our eyes into focus, diminishing difficulty finishing a sentence or idea. I thought that was old age, but we're getting there. I realize that's sleep deprivation. It can also lead to depression, hallucinations, other emotional problems. So it's very important that we get the proper amount of sleep every night to function properly. Now, I don't know how long a person can go without sleep before they die.
About 4 days.
Well, a little bit longer than that. The world's record is 18 days, 21 hours, and 40 minutes. That was set during a rocking chair competition. 18 days. If I sit on a rocking chair for an hour, I'm asleep. I mean, 18 days, 21 hours, that's a long time. The winner, however, I should say, experienced hallucinations, paranoia, blurred vision, slurred speech, and memory loss. But they did fully recover after they slept for an extended period of time. I'm not sure if they slept for 18 days, but for an extended period of time. Now, we might also want to add here that God's designed the human body to need sex. God's created us as sexual beings with certain hormones that flow through our bodies that heightens the sexual urges in us. Paul in 1 Corinthians 7 speaks of the burning with passion. that is inflamed in a young man or a young woman. God has created us with a sex drive. It's His way of assuring the continuation of the human race. But unlike our need for water, our food or sleep for survival, it's possible to survive without sex. In fact, it's possible to live a celibate life. It's possible, as Paul says in 1 Thessalonians 4:3, to abstain from sexual immorality, that each of you should know how to possess his own vessel in sanctification and honor, not in passion of lust, like the Gentiles who do not know God. So it's possible for a person to be able to control their sexual urges and to abstain. But we have to learn how to do so and not give in to the lust burning within. Now, may I say, each of these physical needs which we have, food, water, sleep, sex, can become an occasion for temptation. If we have unmet physical needs, these unmet physical needs can open us up for a season to be tempted. It was when the children of Israel were thirsty in the wilderness at Massah and Meribah that they grumbled against God and against Moses. They accused him of bringing them out to the desert so they may die of thirst. They were at the point of mutiny, ready to stone Moses and return to Egypt, and God graciously provided them water from, of all places, a rock. God met their physical needs. But their need for water became a season for temptation. It was when the disciples were tired and weary after a long day of a week of activities and partying that Jesus asked them to stay and keep watch for him as he prayed to his Father. And when he returned, what did Jesus found? He found his disciples sleeping. And he said to them, "What? Could you not watch with me for 1 hour?" How many times is our spirit willing, but our own flesh is weak? We fall into temptation. It was when the sexual needs of the married couples were going unmet due to an unbiblical view of sex, a reaction to the sexually immoral culture from which the Christians at Corinth had come. Paul writes these words in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. "Nevertheless, because of sexual immorality, let each man have his own wife, and let each woman have her own husband. Let the husband render to his wife the affection due her, and likewise also the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. And likewise the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Do not deprive one another except with consent for a time, that you may give yourselves to fasting and prayer and come together again, so that Satan does not tempt you because of your lack of self-control." God designed this for a married couple to meet each other's sexual needs. And failure to meet those needs can be a season of temptation. You know, it was when Jesus was hungry, after not eating for 40 days, that Satan comes and tempts him. In regards to food, Jesus enters that season of temptation. Unmet physical needs. When are you most tempted? When do you face the greatest temptations? I find that I'm the weakest when I'm hungry and tired. When I'm hungry, I tend to become short with my wife. My usual amiable self snaps at Susan and others when I'm hungry. I readily identify with that current Snickers commercial. I'm not myself when I'm hungry. And I also find that I'm most susceptible to temptation when I'm tired and weary. Perhaps bored a little bit with life. How about you? Do you struggle with temptation late at night? After everybody else has gone to bed, do you struggle with watching something on TV that you know you shouldn't, or visiting a website late at night that you would never invite your spouse or parents to see? Do you find that you get into arguments late at night? Say things that you regret saying in the morning that you would not have said, but your thinking is impaired because of sleep deprivation. My wife and I have made it a practice never to discuss anything seriously after 10 p.m. at night. Because we know that at that hour we're no longer thinking properly and are likely to say some things that we're going to regret in the morning. So may I give you some simple advice, pastoral advice. If you're tired, go to bed. If you find that you are being tempted due to an unmet physical need, if it's possible to legitimately meet that need, do so. If not, entrust that need into God's hands, asking for the help in handling the season of temptation in which you will find yourself. Now in 2 weeks, Lord willing, we're going to take a look at the first area which Satan tempts Jesus. He's going to tempt Jesus in this area of unmet physical need. Jesus has gone 40 days and 40 nights without food. He's hungry and thus susceptible to temptation. I trust that when we come back together, we'll learn not only the depths of his temptation, of what Satan is actually seeking to do, but we'll learn from the Master himself how to handle the temptation and be victorious. But in closing, let me once again review the temptation seasons. Beware, first of all, when you're in the midst of a spiritual high. When things are going great with you and the Lord, beware. That's the time when you can be tempted. Beware when you're under the control of the Spirit of God. Don't mistakenly think that because you're being led by the Spirit that you are thus impervious to temptation. You're not. Beware of those times when you're alone in the wilderness, away from people who know and love you. When you think you're by yourself in private, it's when temptation comes. Beware of those times when you're under a siege for an extended period of time as our adversary seeks to wear down your resolve. Beware of the times when you're surrounded by bad dudes. Whether Satan, demons, or just plain evil people that are seeking to pull you away from your devotion to Christ. Beware of the times when you're full of self-confidence. You think to yourself, I would never do that. I would never sin like old Joe or like old Stanley. Beware of those times when you are full of yourself. Those are times when you might fall. Beware of those times when you're experiencing success and prosperity. For the temptation will be that you'll forget God and your quest for more riches is going to compromise your faith. Then beware when you have unmet physical needs. You know, many times I finish a sermon, the words of a hymn come to my mind. But this morning as I finish this sermon, I'm reminded not of the words of a hymn, but the words of the theme song from the Candid Camera television show. When it's least expected, you're elected. You're the star today, smile. You're on Candid Camera. Why do these words come to my mind? Because it could be the theme song for temptation. While we have pinpointed 8 seasons when we are most vulnerable to temptation, the truth is that any given day it can happen. Usually when it's least expected, you're elected. You're the tempted one today. But rather than smiling, I believe it's a time to be sober, to be vigilant. Because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour, resist him steadfast in the faith. We need to keep our focus on the Lord, the one who was tempted in all ways just as we are, yet was without sin. To follow his example And in that way, we'll be able to weather the seasons of temptation.